Today on the Inland Journal podcast, we talk with the Deputy Marshal of the Spokane Office of the U.S. Marshals Service. The service has a few basic tasks. For one, it's active in rounding up fugitives around the region. Sometimes the Marshals Service makes news. For example, one of its agents, Bill Deegan, was killed during the shootout at Ruby Ridge, Idaho in August 1992. But for the most part, it's an agency that keeps a low public profile. But the number two man in the Spokane office agreed to come to our studios and talk about what he and his colleagues do.
My name is Gavin Duffy, and I'm the chief deputy for the Eastern District of Washington.
You have come from outside of Spokane. Tell me a little bit about your background and how you got to Spokane.
I've bounced around a little bit. I've been unfortunate enough to experience a lot of both the country and the Marshals Service. After 5 years in the Air Force, I joined the Marshals Service in Eastern California, and then I went back to the East Coast, where I'm from, for a while, through the South in Atlanta, did some time in some international offices, back to D.C., and now I'm hopefully finishing up out here in the Inland Empire.
So how does it work in the Marshals Service in terms of going from one place to the next? You put in for transfers, or are you just automatically moved around? Is that part of the gig?
Typically, while we do sign move agreements, for the most part, we tend to stay where we choose to and then apply for positions as they open, either in specific divisions or missions that an individual would want to be a part of or a region where they would like to get.
And you sound like you're perfectly happy to have landed here.
I couldn't be any happier. This region is incredible.
So what does the Marshals Service do? Let me ask, before I ask that, what do you think is the perception of the Marshals Office from the public?
Well, I'm a believer, so my hope is that the public sees the Marshals Service as kind of the independent law enforcement entity that serves the judicial process and ensures rule of law throughout the country by both protecting the judiciary and ensuring that process goes unmolested, as well as by pursuing the guilty and the alleged guilty of violent crime.
So how does a marshal's office compare with, say, a county sheriff's office or a Washington State Patrol?
We're a federal entity, so we specifically focus, especially on in support of the federal judiciary, we focus on federal crime in terms of federal prisoners. We are mandated by some law to assist our state and local counterparts with going after and pursuing violent fugitives charged with state crimes. So we straddle both kind of spheres, and that's probably why we work so well jointly with both state, local, and other federal partnerships, is because our mission really bisects both.
So you transport prisoners, inmates, whatever word you want to use for them, to your federal courtrooms and back. Where do they stay when they're not in the courtrooms in that case?
Well, if we're bringing them for an appearance in a federal courthouse, they are housed in any number of state and local facilities or federal facilities, depending on where we are geographically. And then they're brought in per hearing and returned at night. Some of these transportations can be longer haul, and some are a few blocks, depending where you are in the country.
And do the marshals or the deputy marshals all just transporting people, or do they do a whole lot of things as part of their jobs?
Deputy marshals are jack of all trades. Our two primary missions are the protection of the judiciary, which includes prisoner transportation and prisoner production. And then the other primary is the apprehension of violent fugitives, both state, local, and federal, throughout the United States. So a deputy marshal has to be versed in all of our mission sets, and they get, throughout our history, have been across the board from some kind of crazy to some very scary mission sets for the agency. But for the most part, deputies tend to specialize in one or the other as they progress down their career path.
So a little history. How old is the deputy marshal's service?
Well, the Marshals Service celebrated its 225th and 2014. So since 1789, we're 230 years old, which makes us the oldest federal law enforcement agency.
Wow. And so how do you work with some of the other federal law enforcement agencies, FBI and some of the others?
Our missions differ. We primarily serve in a support role for them to facilitate their investigations, whereas the FBI and the DEA, they develop criminal investigations for prosecution. We have a very limited purview into that sector of law enforcement. So by apprehending the fugitives and working with them in a joint and collaborative sense or way to pursue, locate, and arrest their fugitives, we're supporting their investigations so that they can focus on what they do best, which is ensuring that these violent fugitives and violent criminal organizations spend more time in prison.
So you're not an investigative agency yourself.
Well, that's not necessarily true. Again, we're jack of all trades. We carry the same job series as criminal investigators. Our investigative purview tends to be enforcing the Adam Walsh Act, which is a more recent mission set given to the Marshal Service, unregistered sex offenders. And then we also will prosecute for threats against the judiciary, the court family, our partnerships within the clerk's office and the federal defenders and the U.S. Attorney's Office. Yeah. There's small charges that we tend to prosecute as they arise. But on a daily basis, other than the Adam Walsh Act prosecutions, pretty minimal prosecutorial requirements of the Marshal Service, mostly focused on the fugitive investigations.
So how large of a geographic area does your office here in downtown Spokane cover?
So the state of Washington is divided into two judicial districts, Eastern and Western. Eastern kind of runs, and this is, you know, not specific, but midline down the Cascades all the way across to Idaho, down to Oregon, and then up to Canada. So it's a pretty significant landmass. Now, if you compare it to, say, the Western District of Texas, we're not as big, but we have a kind of unique geography from high desert in Yakima to true mountains on the border with Canada. So it's a very unique district in its requirements.
So some of your folks spend a lot of time on the road, I would imagine, if you're getting if you've got that large of an area to cover.
Absolutely.
So how many folks in your office?
We have around 30 operational investigators in the office, and we have a great support staff of administrative employees as well in our three offices, one in Spokane, Yakima, and Tri-Cities as well.
And you occupy, what, a one floor or two of the federal building in downtown Spokane?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So how do you train? I mean, you talk about the fact that you're kind of a jack of all trades. So what kind of training does that involve to be able to be proficient in that many things?
Great question. And it's a large part of what I do is ensuring that training occurs, that a training is funded, and that the training is valid to what we're doing on a daily basis. Every deputy marshal goes through what's essentially a six-month training course at the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center in Brunswick, Georgia. And then goes to add-on courses pretty much on an annual basis in different skill sets. Now, as the deputy starts to specialize, they tend to focus training on more specifics. So if a deputy marshal is really focused on the apprehension of fugitives, they will continue to go through investigative training in fugitive apprehension and tactical training to conduct that mission as safely as possible. Now, as a deputy progresses more towards judicial protection or into, say, our witness protection program, they're going to undergo more training involved personal protection, surveillance detection, things of that nature. But our district, because we are somewhat generalist, we try to train at least 8 hours a month, and then I like to have 10 to 15% of the office out at any given day at some sort of training, because it's critical. We can't do our mission unless we're on top of what's going on in the world, and the only way to do that is to go to a lot of times third-party training and learn something new and then bring that back to the rest of the team so that they can incorporate it or not incorporate it, but at least have an idea what's out there.
So a little peripheral, are you also trained to help during disasters and that sort of thing?
Again, we kind of, since 1789, we fill in as needed. Yeah. And based upon kind of our jurisdictional guidelines, we are a really good fail-safe for the federal government at times. So in disasters, we can certainly jump in and support, even at the local level, as directed by the Attorney General, with enforcing whatever law needs to be done, even down to patrol if necessary, in very, very specific circumstances, because that's not something we do day to day. We leave that to the experts at Spokane County and Spokane.
We're talking with Gavin Duffy. He's a deputy marshal in the U.S. Marshal Service office in Spokane. So you become more of an administrator, and I think you kind of shrug your shoulders and, yeah, I guess I am. You may have alluded to this already, but when you were more out on the street, what was sort of your focus?
I was fortunate enough to join our special operations group, so I spent several years, I don't want to say gallivanting, but working and operational missions throughout the world to include Afghanistan and Iraq. And then I really focused on the fugitive side of the house for the last 8 to 9 years with concluding in organized crime and gangs, which had me working with our Mexican counterparts pretty frequently. And so that's what I focused on over the last decade. Prior to that, I was moving prisoners and protecting judges and working warrants all in the same week or serving process, depending on what the week had for me, which is actually probably a little more challenging to stay valid and effective. And my guys, my teammates over in the federal building do that on a daily basis. So
you got me thinking about how does the Marshals Service play a role in what's going on the southern border right now? Would your office be part of that as well?
Again, it's anything that the Attorney General directs or the Director of the Marshals Service needs. So we're going to support any mission that arises as directed. Currently, I don't have anybody supporting it out of my district. But the Marshals Service is affected in all ways with any surge in any form of enforcement. There's more warrants. There's more prisoners. There is just more the situation is more dynamic and could require more federal response. So we're always affected by really any surge that occurs.
In this region, we're talking a lot about, if not white supremacy, but at least some of that. I mean, there's a white supremacist history here. What sorts of, do you get involved in those sorts of issues if you get a tip about somebody who might be dangerous or something like that, hiding up in the hills, whatever it is? Do you get involved in that?
That subject has an arrest warrant, then certainly we're going to become involved in apprehending that fugitive. But to us, it's pretty black and white. We didn't develop the case. We're just here to arrest them safely, both us, them, and everybody around them, get them into custody, let them work through the judicial process and move on to the next fugitive, essentially.
Is there kind of a wave of similar types of issues that you're working on right now more and more?
You know, at times you see that in the Marshals Service. You can kind of see the flavor of the federal law enforcement community. Right now, I don't. It's kind of...
You're working on a whole variety of stuff?
All variety of fugitive cases. It really depends on what other agencies are kind of focusing on. It's kind of what we see as not the afterthought, but we're supporting them. So they're driving what their focus is, and we're targeting their fugitives, apprehending them, and moving on. And so right now, nothing really jumps out, is it?
So the U.S. Marshals Service is one of those that's kind of in the shadows in terms of law enforcement. I say only because they're less visible than the local cops.
Right. I mean, I agree. I wouldn't say shadows. So our goal is to stay absolutely politically agnostic. We do what we're told, and we don't have an opinion. And that's what's made us successful for 230 years in the federal government. And because of that, we don't garner a lot of fanfare all the time. And that's exactly where we want to be. Again, it's our job to do what we're told by the federal judiciary, as well as the Attorney General, and more importantly, the people of Spokane or the people of the Tri-Cities or, you know, the people of Kettle Falls. We're here to support them by aggressively pursuing violent criminals to reduce violent crime in their communities.
I guess my point was that in 1992, the U.S. Marshals Service kind of unwittingly ended up in the spotlight with the Ruby Ridge case up in North Idaho. How do situations like that affect the morale of an agency or the way a public views an agency?
Well, I think that's all pretty circumstantial on how that it's viewed, and both internally and externally. And there's always two sides to every situation, and may or may not be reflected publicly. We just do our best to always try to take the high road, to remember that our job is to support the Constitution and ensure that it is being followed to the letter of the law.
Yeah. So how is the U.S. Marshal chosen to serve? Is it a rise from within, or is it a political
appointment? It can be. It's like the Marshal Service. It's a little vague at times. It's one of the oldest federal positions out there. It was established in 1789 while George Washington was still a president, and it was kind of part of the establishment of the federal judiciary and the Supreme Court, as we need this almost administrator enforcer for the system. And so since then, it's been fairly similar. It is requires a certain amount of law enforcement experience. There are plenty of U.S. Marshals in the agency currently who serve their whole careers as deputy U.S. Marshals, and there's some that come from the outside. In Eastern Washington, we have Craig Thayer, who is the U.S. Marshal who came from Stevens County, who has 45 years of legitimate law enforcement experience. He was presidentially appointed and confirmed by the Senate, so it's a pretty esteemed position in our community.
So over your years in the Marshal Service, how have things changed? How's the job? Is the job any different than it used to be?
Yeah, I think if you ask anybody that, whether they're, you know, building houses or running a radio show, there's been changes. The Marshal Service has been pretty steady. We continue to increase our role in the state and local fugitive arena, which is very important. And I think that the Marshal Service is starting to get recognized for its ability to really support the community through fugitive apprehension and through collaborative and joint partnerships. Remember, we very rarely have rivalries because we don't compete with other agencies. So for the most part, we can kind of be a neutral third party who just brings fugitives in and provides whatever intelligence they was garnered during that operation and then move on. And because of that, I think we're really starting to come into our own in that respect. But the agency's history is just, it's so elaborate and storied, you know, from supporting the civil rights movements and desegregating universities to swapping spies with the Soviet Union. I mean, it's the Marshal Service it's a tapestry of just incredible stories over the last 230 years. I don't know that it's changed that significantly in the last 17 years of my service.
It was just different weapons, perhaps, or different...
Right. I mean, it's certainly things change. Technology is racing faster than we ever thought. You can pay for a cup of coffee with your phone. I'm still waiting for my jetpack, but my hoverboard. But it's you know, when I was still doing paper timesheets when I started, and now the new deputies wouldn't know how to sign a paper timesheet. So those kinds of things change. But they're a blip in the radar, right? Like, in the whole scheme of things, I don't know that we've changed that dramatically. We've probably gotten better, and certainly nothing that I've done. But as an agency, we continue to, the leadership we get continues to want to evolve the agency and work more collaboratively and be a bigger part of the picture. And it seems to be showing.
Is there more emphasis on cyber crimes and using technology, more technological tools to be able to find people and things?
Well, there's no more emphasis on it. It's just we're going to function as we can to catch the bad guy's alleged bad guy, as fast and as safely as we can. That nothing's changed in those regards. Our primary concern is the safety of the community, ourselves, and even the fugitive. So certainly in my little myopic view and my little snapshot in my agency, I would probably say it's changed, but ultimately it's really not that significant compared to where we were. I mean, 100 years ago, they were just really incorporating cars into law enforcement. You know, how mind-blowing is that? And now we're, you know, I answer my email on a phone. That was even new to me when I started in this agency. And I'm starting to feel old, but I don't, not that old where that's so shocking, but you almost don't need a desk anymore.
So it's an agency that has typically tried to stay quiet and out of the so why are you here talking to me today?
Well, I don't think we try to stay quiet. I think if you Google U.S. Marshal, you'll get 50 pages of the arrest we've made nationwide. I think there's something to be said for being a quiet professional, but there's also something to be said for letting the community know we're here and what we're doing. And on top of that, maybe somebody who listens to this thinks to call Crime Stoppers about a fugitive they saw. And maybe we get one more arrest out of this and one more fugitive off the street that could have potentially done something to somebody else tomorrow. So I think it's a good opportunity to certainly get the word out on the work that we're doing on a daily basis, especially as it comes to violent crime and child sex offenders, which are kind of our two primary focuses.
Gavin Duffy is a deputy marshal in the U.S. Marshals Service office in Spokane. For more about the history of the Marshal Service, some of the deputies who have served and died in the line of duty, go to the Marshal Service website at usmarshals.gov. Friday on the Inland Journal podcast, we'll talk with a Central Valley High School teacher who went to Israel this summer to learn more about how to teach about the Holocaust to her students. You can subscribe to the Inland Journal podcast at Apple Podcasts, NPR One, or Google Play, or hear it at the Spokane Public Radio website. Your comments and story ideas are always welcome at inlandjournal@kpbx.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Doug Nadvornik.